it's a terrific framework on which to hang a narrative that's always about curiosity.
Hi, I'm Matt Welch, editor-in-chief of Reason Magazine, and I'm here in Las Vegas with Adam Savage, the co-host of the great show Mythbusters on the Discovery Channel, which has been going on for 7 years now?
7.5 years we've been filming it, yeah.
Tell us about the genesis of the show. How did it come to be created, and how did it sort of take off like it has?
It remains the most startling thing that's ever happened to me. I was working as a special effects technician in San Francisco in early 2000s, and Jamie Heineman, who I used to work for and remained friendly with, called me up in the spring of 2002 and said that he'd gotten a call from the Discovery Channel, said they were casting a show called Mythbusters. They wanted a couple of guys who were interested in building experiments and testing stuff on a show. And would we send in a demo reel? And would we send in a demo reel the next day? And I said, you know, this sounds interesting. And I went in with a video camera, and Jamie's assistant, shop assistant, shot about 2 hours worth of video.
What did you build and blow up?
We actually, we discussed a myth. We discussed the lawn chair Larry myth. They said, discuss a myth like the balloon chair guy. So we spent 15 minutes talking about him. And then at one point, I know Jamie has a fire cabinet. So I said, let's blow something up. If you look at the demo reel now, it looks exactly like the show because we're in the same shop, we're in the same space, and we're doing the same stuff, lighting this bunch of fireworks on a metal stand, and then we run away because it set part of the shop on fire, and Discovery went nuts for it. They showed up 3 weeks later. The production company showed up 3 weeks later to start shooting the pilots. We did three episodes in the summer of 2002, and we haven't stopped shooting since. It's now 171 hours of programming.
Wow.
Yeah.
Now, you had a long sort of career or personal life of building stuff, working in special effects, but had you been interested up until that moment in actually trying to debunk myths and sort of like unbuild things? And
no. The myth part is a scarecrow. We always say nobody's ever emailed us thanking us for the groundbreaking work in urban legend research we're doing.
Yeah.
I definitely feel at this point we have a real insight into what makes urban legends and great stories propagate. But for the most part, it's a terrific framework on which to hang a narrative that's always about curiosity. It's always about curiosity, and it turns out that the best way to satisfy your curiosity happens to be the scientific method. It happens to be see what you can learn from doing this, build on that to build the next thing. And the scientific method happens fortuitously for us to grid perfectly on top of a narrative arc. And, I mean, that's the arc of every episode is we're trying to figure out how something works by continually testing it and building our knowledge on what we've learned before, and we're still thrilled by doing that.
In the process of doing that, has it sort of changed your ideas about the propagation of myths or about society and the way people... Has it changed your politics in any way?
It hasn't changed my politics except to make me more politically active because I realize that I'm a voice that people pay attention to. Mm-hmm. I'm very cognizant now of the role, of the very unexpected role we play in educating children. I mean, we don't pander to kids and we never set out to make a show that was educational, really. I mean, we understand that that's what it is, but if we had attempted to do that, we would have failed. There's a veracity to the fact that we are actually curious about what we're doing that keeps people watching. And we're now getting emails from people saying that they're graduating from college, having grown up watching our show.
Wow.
And been inspired to go into the sciences because they watch Mythbusters, which is, I mean, it's humbling and bizarre and amazing and thrilling.
What's the sort of future of this? Are you just going to keep doing it until you get bored or they kick you off?
The show is still doing fantastically. We are still leading our demo in our time slot on Discovery on advertising-supported cable. After 7 years, our viewership stays beautifully, beautifully stable. I like to point out that our ratings died during the presidential debates, but didn't budge during Game 1 or Game 7 of the last World Series.
Oh, wow.
It's a very specific viewing audience, I think. And the show's still going strong. We'll keep doing it until they lock the doors and it doesn't look like there's any end in sight.
What are sort of maybe like three categories, if there are three or two or whatever, of types of myths that sort of obtain in people's consciousness that you have encountered?
Well, we definitely started out with your kind of laundry list of urban legends, things right. that you would have found on the Darwin Awards or under urban legend sites like Snopes.com or The Straight Dope. But we have branched way out from that, realizing that the way movies perceive the world and lead you to believe that every car that goes off a cliff will blow up into a fireball, that's very fertile territory. There's idiomatic phrases like slipping on a banana peel, finding a needle in a haystack. We're just actually looking at doing another one where I want to test wild goose chase. I want to see Jamie stealing candy from a baby. And then there's the prevailing wisdom about how things work, like the 5-second rule, which actually, you know, is one of those things when you start to go look at it, there might be something really interesting there.
Is that you drop the pacifier on the ground? And,
if it's only been there for 5 seconds,
we call that the 3-second rule in the household.
And exactly.
I think it's going down to 2 in 1 second.
We just did double dipping, for instance. That just aired, I think, this last week. And we showed that there was no ill effects from double dipping. The amount of bacteria that you impart back to the salsa by biting a chip and putting it back in, negligible.
Having worked in effects and sort of being a participant in sort of 21st century technologies and whatnot, do you get the sense that people, because they've done their own photoshopping and are on the internet, are they given more kind of skeptical tools now, or is it more that the technology has made it easier to fabricate things?
Well, that's a good question. Obviously it's both. I think people are... We're always asked, are you guys running out of material? And, having just sat down and gone over 160 stories, it'll carry us 2 seasons ahead at least. We're not running out of stories. And we say, we're not going to run out of stories until people stop believing stupid shit. And that's never going to happen. People are still just as gullible. And a good story is a good story, and you want to pass it on, even if you're not quite sure it's true. I like to imagine that the web is providing people with more... Well, no, actually, of course the web is providing people with more tools to be skeptical, to cross-check their facts. Not everyone is doing it, but because the web provides so much information on a first-order retrievability to everybody, people can go and check their facts. And they can go... honestly, I know that a lot of my fact-checking has to do with just reading the style of the writing I'm reading on a website. Yeah. I can smell bullshit just by how badly written something is sometimes. It's not necessarily about, that the facts are wrong.
How many times they use of course and naturally?
Yes, or you need to keep an open mind because this is the only interpretation there is for such a thing.
Yeah. Well, that's great. We have a limited time window on the internet and YouTube and whatnot. So I think we'll wrap up here. For Reason TV, I'm Matt Welch.